This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 798, brought to you by Mac Weldon. For 20% off your first order, visit macweldon.com/ifanboy and our promo code iFanboy. Radically efficient wardrobing, and iFanboy listeners just like you.
Got this in pocket, gunpowder, I'm gonna use it, intention. Motion, restrained emotion. I've been diving.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week episode 798. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
Hi there.
your hello is in direct competition with what you wrote in the script. Which, in case anyone's wondering, we don't script everything, but we put little joke welcome messages in the script. And
I wasn't looking at the script at the time, so I'd forgotten what I wrote, and I went back, and I was like, the motherfucking champion!
There you go. Which, we are a fanboy, every group, a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best one they liked. We call it the pick of the week. We struggle to find enough books to put in the show to talk about. We talk about those books. We talk about the patron pick. We hopefully answer some listener mail. We have a good time. It's all about having a good time as we ramp up to episode 800. Josh, you had this pick. There's a spoiler warning that I skipped, and here it is. Josh had the pick, and Josh, on this week of comics, we should note that, you know, savvy listeners will recognize that we usually have about 8 to 10 books to talk about on the show. That's usually where we go. But I think this week we have 7, and that was a struggle. It was a struggle.
Yeah, and it wasn't like there weren't books. It wasn't like, wow, no,
I read 22 comics this week.
Yeah, I don't know what that says. I don't know if that says anything about comics or us, but here we are. This is how we deal with it.
It was just the week. It was very much just a, you know, that was fine week.
So last night around, I want to say 9 Eastern, Connor texts me, says, you know what the pick is? And I'm reading. I'm actively reading at that moment. And I don't know, I got a handful left. I'd already read all the big stuff. Even the mainstream stuff, I mean, and I went, I got nothing. I got nothing. And then about an hour later, I had finished all the sort of other books I had to do. And then I was like, oh, I guess I'll read some more. So I like went and found some other books to read. And a little while after that, I texted him and just said, fuck it, Usagi Yojimbo. And I think I will struggle slightly to come up with a brilliant story bits of this, but I will tell you that there are two ongoing Usagi Yojimbo releases from IDW. He moved over from Dark Horse after years and years and years and years and years at Dark Horse. They're over at IDW, and they were colorizing them, which I tend to think neither gives nor takes away all that much. I've gotten very used to it, so it's not weird seeing it in color, but so there are two ongoing. One of them are sort of reprints of old stories that have been colorized and are being reprinted, and one of them are sort of the ongoing adventures. I struggle to tell you the difference between them other than the title. Like, I don't go, oh, this is old or this is new. It's pretty goddamn consistent.
Well, that's the beauty of the book.
Yeah.
And I've only read it on and off. You've been reading it pretty consistently.
So in the old days, I mean, Usagi Yojimbo's been around for probably 35 years, I'm guessing. You know, I knew about it for a long time. I didn't really read it. And at some point, you know, in the 2000s, I started picking it up here and there. And it's fun, whatever, but people would refer to it in sort of reverent tones and, you know, oh, this is this thing, it's a master and whatever. And I was like, it's fine, you know, it's good. And then, you know, at some point, I think us at iFanboy we all had some version of religious conversion when it came to comics. And it tends to coincide with our specific tastes and what's available. And one day with these comics that you saw, it clicked. I was like, I just love this. I don't know why. I can expound when we talk about Rorschach or we talk about whatever it is we're going to talk about. I can look at it and I can say, oh, well, he did this thing with the plot and I like this tone and whatever. And the thing about Usagi Yojimbo is that for the last, you know, handful of years, it comes out and I just go, sweet. They go by really fast. They're you know, an easy read. But that isn't to say that it's entirely breezy. There's something there to it that I just really enjoy. And I literally, every time one comes out, I'm like, sweet. And they come out like once every 2 weeks. It's great. And, you know, this issue was no exception. This is issue number 22 of the current ongoing series. Usagi and his cousin are walking through some town. That's what the book is. You don't want to expect there's not going to be like a very special issue. It's right. They're walking through town and they run into some little girl that they kind of know and they help their guards chasing her and they help evade the guards. And she's like, I don't know what happened. He's like, yes, you do. And he doesn't fall for her bullshit, but he likes her. And then the girl's older sister comes along and he's wary of them, but he likes them. And Usagi's like fully competent. No one's getting the drop on him, but he's got like a, I don't know, something about that character has a great attitude. Like, he's completely wise to the world and isn't going to have one pulled over him, but he's very benevolent and sort of, you know, he's a calm dude. And he meets this other girl, and the other girl, like, mugs his friend, and she's like, give the money, like, pickpockets him, give it back, and she's like, okay, fine. And they just, it's tied to an earlier story where there was a sword stolen, and then there was a forgery, and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, the point is these girls went and they stole something from somebody important, and it is like a list of their bribes and crimes. And so Usagi's like, we got to go give this to police. And the girl's like, what do we sell it to the guy? And he's like, no, we can't do that. And then all of the guy's soldiers went and attacked them, and they all worked together. You know, it's super simple, but there is at the inside, like, A, there's a little morality play. Mm-hmm. A lot of this samurai stuff, you know, if you read it, and I'm sure we're getting super westernized versions of it, but it's always like there's right and there's wrong and there's good and there's evil. And Usagi sort of, because he's a ronin, he's a wandering samurai without a master, you know, he's learned to live in the world a little bit and has flexible morality in terms of what's actually right versus what the rule is,
right.
If that makes sense. And that has something to do with the whole thing. And, you know, whenever there's a fight, there's no danger because you know Usagi's going to win against a billion people. And that's kind of the fun part, is over and over watching people be like, let's get him. And he's like, all right, let's do this again. You know, like, it's, you know, he has less trouble with that than Batman does. At the end of it, Batman is tired and beaten up.
Right.
Or, you know, he's more like a tired Wolverine. He's like, yeah, okay. Just, you know, I'll take care of this.
You know,
he doesn't
want to
kill anybody, but he will.
It should be said that, first of all, Stan Sakai is legitimately a master of the craft,
yes.
But it's incredibly impressive to do 35 years of a book. Is it 35 years?
I was basing that on the fact that I know that when I was a kid in the late 80s, there was a Usagi Yojimbo Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles action figure. So I know it's been around at least that long.
Well,
however
long
it's part of it, it's a long fucking time.
As anyone who's done the same thing week after week knows, it can be really hard. I mean, especially if you're coming up with a different story every time. 1984 was when the first issue came out.
So nearly 36 years. I nailed it, by the way.
So
37.
36 years of telling samurai stories, and they're still really good.
Yeah, they're it's fun and they're fresh. They don't... I don't get the sense that there's any...
Wait, did I have that toy too?
I never had the toy. I just remember it. I was like, what is that?
I might have had the toy. I don't know why.
I didn't even know it was a comic. But Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles came from the exact same scene that Usagi Yojimbo did.
It's just really impressive. That it is. The quality level is still super high. And he's still got new stories to tell.
You don't get the sense of phoning it in. This guy is just channeling this thing that he does. Stan Sakai. Right. Like, this is the thing he does. I don't think I've actually met him. I don't think of it, but I've seen him at shows.
We have seen him at cons and always talk about interviewing him, but never did on the show.
He seems sort of like Usagi.
Yeah.
Like, he just looks like he's in a good mood. He, you know, he gets to do his thing. You know, it's no challenge. It's a big challenge to sort of still be around, you know, I'm sure sales aren't burning up the charts or whatever, but he's going to do his thing.
It's a perennial, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, no, it's funny because you stopped for a while, didn't you?
Yeah, I came on and off, I think. You know,
yeah, because there's a while in the past where you would pick this with some regularity, not all the time, but, you know, a couple times a year. And it was always nice to check in on each other. And I'll dip in now and then, not a ton, but
I can do that. That's,
yeah.
I think that's the other thing. There is some ongoing narrative, but really. You know, I don't ever really think, oh, I missed the last issue. It doesn't matter. Like, you go and you hang out with him on his travels for a little while. It's not, I will say, like, I enjoy it now a lot more than I ever did, you know, for whatever reason. And I cannot put my finger on it. But I know that when I looked at all my books this week, I was like, well, this is good. It has this. And I just thought, you know, the only one that I can say that I went through with just sort of like anticipation followed up by the experience, followed by getting that last page and be like, oh, man, what happens next? That was Usagi Yojimbo 22. And in a way, it's so almost innocuously enjoyable.
Right.
It's difficult for me to pick out what it is other than it makes me happy. There's, I don't know if your mom's cooking or, you know, just something that feels right and you're familiar with that you can't put your finger on about what it is. And there's not really a qualification there other than all the noise around it stepped away. And I was like, oh, this is the thing I enjoyed the most.
Mm-hmm.
And this is in a week where... Like, people really, I don't think that was entirely successful, but comics really made a go at it. Like, they tried to, like, there were some big deal kind of comic books, you know, and putting on a big show. And at the end of it, I was like, oh, let's just go for these simple noodles. I think that makes me happy.
Well, we had the final issue of Rorschach number 12, Tom King, Jorge Fornes, Dave Stewart, Clayton Cowles. And, you know, 11 was sort of... I think 11 was the high point in terms of the story. Like, you knew what was going to happen after 11. Yep. And so 12 was just a matter of watching it play out.
Well, that being said, I had no idea the manner in which this was.
No,
like,
we knew what the
mystery was, but this was complete, like, I don't know what's going to happen here. And honestly, by the end of it, and you can talk about the details, I was left like, I have no idea how I feel about what I just read.
I thought this issue, the real strength of it was the way it played out in terms of, like you said, you weren't sure how Ruffalo Colombo was going to expose the Turley campaign for orchestrating a hit on itself, and you didn't know how Ruffalo Colombo as the new Rorschach, which is what was hinted in the last issue, was going to get his Rorschachian revenge. Certainly didn't expect the massive stabbing campaign. But to me, it was the storytelling, especially Jorge Fornes, because this issue is a conversation between, there's basically four characters in this issue, and there's a lot of talking. And I just thought the body language and the storytelling, you know, Ruffalo Colombo and the aide to the senator show up to the senator's office, and he's not even paying attention to them. And just the facial expressions, he's kind of annoyed, but he's also kind of concerned about what this guy's found. I just loved the really slow, languid pace of it before we got to the stab, stab, stab part. And I thought this was a terrific issue. I did. It's just there wasn't a ton of surprise in it, other than enjoying how it was constructed from a storytelling standpoint. But I can see how people wouldn't like this because. you know, you had to really be paying attention and infer things and notice the shadows on Ruffalo Colombo's face in the movie theater at the end and all that kind of stuff to see what was happening, as opposed to really laying it out and saying, I am Rorschach.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about it. I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just still mulling it. Yep. I think what you said is right. It is, you know, it's not entirely unlike Watchmen itself, is that at the end, I think there's ambivalence there with that story too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no hero. There's
right.
no, I do wish that I had read the issue before this, just,
I did
at least gone through it to
I did.
Make sure I knew who I was looking at.
It helped because, I mean, I remember it being very specific in terms of what it was revealing. So I was like, I should probably just go back, and I don't ever hardly do that, but
right. Yeah. Me neither.
I was like, maybe considering it's the final show, I should just make sure I remember exactly what happened. And I just went back and read it quickly before I read this one.
So the events that take place around the tape recorder, I went back through many times.
Mm-hmm.
Just to sort of figure out what had happened. It's not that it's unclear. That's not the case. It's almost like what is on the tape, which is really, you're so used to reading.
Tapes of a MacGuffin.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So like when you, I mean, it's kind of interesting because when you're
actually, we do hear the tape. The tape is just the speech he plays to trick the guard outside. Yeah.
So that's, it's irrelevant. So in terms of the form, you know, you're reading the text because you're used to getting the story from that.
Yes.
And the text that is coming out of that tape is irrelevant. It's completely innocuous. It has nothing to do with anything. And again, that's not criticism. It's just an interesting playing with the form. I'm still thinking about it.
I really enjoyed this miniseries. I mean, I remember we came out of nowhere. All of a sudden, it was like, wait, Tom King is doing a Watchmen miniseries? And then
Jorge are at the movies, so that's nice.
It's been so strange. But really compelling, and I really would like, and I don't often say this, but I really would like to read this all in one go and see, you know, how much of it's laid out. But the ultimate story is that, you know, this President Robert Redford has such a stranglehold on the electoral votes, especially those out of the new state of Vietnam, that the only chance his competitor thinks he has is to stage his own assassination and blame it on that Redford campaign. And so that's been the main driving force. That's what this guy uncovers. And so since he's become inoculated into Rorschach's worldview by the end of the story, he decides the only proper way to end this is to kill everyone involved instead of exposing them, which is what he does.
It's weird. So and then the idea would be that, like, Rorschachism?
It's like a disease.
Yeah.
It infects people.
And then the other thing is, I mean, Rorschach, let's go back and like, you know, it's a thing where you look at random patterns and you say what you think about it, and that says something about you. And I think that's a theme that's happening, is that people are looking at this pattern.
Mm-hmm.
They make the decision of it. It got Frank Miller, it got Steve Ditko, and now it got Ruffalo Colombo.
Right.
And violence was the answer to all of that stuff.
Right.
I think at the end, after the stabbing, Frank Miller should have like bust through the window and he's like, stab a motherfucker! That would have been the best way to go.
I mean, I assume it's a stabbing. We don't see it. Is there a knife in that guy's neck? Oh, he stabs him with the beer bottle. That's what it was.
Yes, that is the case.
Yeah.
It's Crash.
He breaks the bottle and stab, stab, stab. Yeah.
Slash, and then fink, fink, fink.
Yeah.
That's a risky move because you don't know how it's going
to
break.
It's actually hard to break a beer bottle, too.
You're going to do damage, but the lethality and the sort of reliability of that damage is...
You
got to
hope it breaks in a way you can still grip it and it's got a stabby pointed end.
And that part's not going to break.
Yeah.
The after you break it, that shard that you're using for the stabbing. Is this too far?
I'm just, I didn't feel bad about either of them dying. I look back at the conversations, and it's just, there's some terrific acting going on here.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right before the stabbing.
You make a really good point.
Ruffalo Colombo says, my work around the tape shows that the confession is accurate, and Turley goes, he's smoking, does it, and then there's a silent panel where he's blowing the smoke out of his nose while he's looking at Ruffalo Colombo with the same expression. There's just terrific stuff like that through this whole issue.
You're right. It's some of the best acting is a good way to put it. And it's doing subtext in a conversation between people in a comic book. Mm-hmm. And I don't think your standard, you know, I don't think without thinking about it, how you know how impressive that is.
Yeah.
You know how hard that is to do in a comic book where you don't have movement of eyes and movement of body language and things like that? Facial, and they did it.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Fornes,
I think
is
the
really
worst drawing in this book is Tom King and Jorge Fornes.
Yeah, then it's not a great likeness of either one of them. Well, no. Jorge Fornes is pretty good. Tom King's not that great.
It just stands out a lot. They put the light. They should have. I'm going to criticize Dave Stewart. I think they should have turned the light down on that. It looks like they got a spotlight right on him.
So we're next going to see Fornes as is appropriate for a guy who was started off as much more of a Mazzucchelli clone on Daredevil.
Well, I mean, I think he's certainly upped his chops since that point.
Yeah.
For sure. For
and I'm not saying it's a negative. I like the style a lot.
Yeah.
So for me, Josh, not surprising probably, pick of the week would have been Justice Fantastic Four 435, the 100-page spectacular celebrating 60 years of Fantastic Four, although it wasn't issue 600. It was issue 6-something else.
This is the book that asked the question, 680. All right, guys. Can there be such a thing as too much Kang?
Well, here's the thing. I loved this issue, and I thought this week's Kang number 2 wasn't as good as Kang number 1 or this issue. So this was...
I agree.
I read them back to back, and I agree with you. Reading back to back, I was like, ooh, lots of Kang. However, when I finished this issue, I thought this was a much more fun Kang than the Kang in Kang the Conqueror number 2. And I loved the Council of Kangs. I love the different Kangs. I love how much they hate each other. Even though they're all the same person. I love the Book of Kang.
They distrust themselves. It's a very, very funny conceit.
I love the Book of Kang where they have to write their adventures down. And the one, Immortus is very much on top of making sure. Immortus is like the middle manager of the team.
The Immortus is like, you can't do anything to me. I have the book. And they're like, what the fuck does that mean? And it did not matter. Like, he thought he was protected by the book. I'm going to tell you what the best thing about this whole issue was for me.
Uh-huh.
I hadn't noticed the credits for whatever reason. I just started reading through it. And I go, is this John Romita Jr.?
Yes, yes.
And it was like having him back.
It was great, Romita. Great, Romita.
It was perfect. It was exactly what he should be drawing.
Mm-hmm.
And he just did it. There was 15 inkers. There was 5 inkers. But in a way, like, I was like, I get it. It was a shit ton of pages.
Yeah.
You know, and who knows when they started it. But it was just like full on JR, you know, and he's, he's getting old. And yeah. I don't mean that like, can't do it.
Yeah.
I mean that I'm unaware. Because his name's Junior, I still think of him as a young upstart still. And he's got to be in his 60s. And he works constantly. And I just like, I want him to work forever is my point. Like,
oh, I was so thrilled. The first, I mean, like you, I don't think his name was on the cover or I didn't even look at it. No, his name's not on the cover. So the first page, because, you know, we've been reading this whole time. It's been these other great artists. And I was like, this is not those guys. What's going on? And I went, wait a minute. It's Romita and it looks awesome. So the story of this issue is that the Fantastic Four return from their latest adventure and there's this mysterious device. They discover this mysterious device in their headquarters. It's invisible and it's got time energy on it. And we cut to Never Space, the place where broken timelines go to die, which is the Kang headquarters. And we have the Council of Kangs. We have Kang. We have Immortus. We have Rama Tut. No, the other one, that was from the other issue. What's his name?
The Scion? No, the newest one.
That's the last one. But who's the...
Dine...
Who's the Tut?
Ramatut is what you're talking
is
about.
Is Ramatut?
Yeah.
I thought that was the other Tut. Anyway.
No, it's the name of my iPad.
We have three... And then we have Red... Scarlet Centurion. So these are the four...
That's the one I couldn't... Yeah.
The four Kang identities. They're all around their table being Kang to each other. And then you can only enter the headquarters if you are of Kang... lineage or Kang blood or whatever. And so another body enters and he called me Scion. They're like, who the fuck are you? He's like, I am you in the future. So I was like, awesome, a new Kang. And so they're all, you know, talking about Kanginess and they decide they have to go retrieve. It's a broadcast energy transmitter situation. They have there's four pieces of this time object, and they've been sent all over the time stream to the Fantastic Four in different parts of time. And so they decide they're all going to go pick up a piece, and they're going to kill the Fantastic Four in each scenario. And so then they're going to come back and then recount their adventure so Immortus can write it down in the Great Book. And so each story is a different time for the Fantastic Four. So the first one's in the 60s, then there's one in the 90s, and then there's one in the 2000s, and then one in the present day. So we get a fun little jaunt through Fantastic Four history. We get to see, you know, some shitty 90s costumes, and we get to see the Freedom Foundation era of Hickman, and we get to go back to the 60s. And then in each one, the Kangs supposedly murder the Fantastic Four to tell their story. Then we find out at the end it's not actually true, and that Scion is actually Reed Richards, because Reed is an ancestor of Kang.
I don't believe that was canon.
Yeah,
it's been for a while. But it definitely is now. Nah, I mean, according to what I'd read before, and I had.
Well, it's always been implied.
Right, exactly.
And now we're outright saying he's Reed is an ancestor of Kang.
Because genetically he was able to get into the thing. So that's why. One thing I noticed in both Kang books that I'm not thrilled about, but I cannot complain about, is they've started using the word variant.
Variant and the TVA is in this issue. Yeah.
Was the TVA a thing that existed?
I have no idea, previously? But now they're full on.
Yep. And I don't love that, but it's just obvious. I notice it. I don't like noticing it.
Are you a variant?
Yeah, I was like, oh, we're doing that.
What if you were a variant?
Mm-hmm.
So I like this because then we got a little time displaced team up of one member from each team, from each era teams up. So you got 60s Sue and 90s Ben Grimm, who's got the helmet on because Wolverine fucked up his face and it didn't grow back. And, you know, I just thought this was a fun history book. The art was terrific. I thought this was great Kang. My favorite Kang is still Kang.
Sure.
He's the most militant and militarized of the Kangs.
He's the most supervillainy.
I love the moment when the guy, Crimson Dynamo, split the thing into all of his versions. So there's five versions of the thing, and they all punch him at the same time. I just thought this was, you know, the kind of stuff that Dan Slott does the best, which is the Marvel deep dive, coming it together in a very emotional, heartfelt story.
I think the thing that made me happiest about this maybe was that it was just Romita.
Yeah.
I thought when they split into the different parts, they were going to go to different artists, and he drew all of them, and I love it because he's perfect for
Marvel history.
Straddling eras. He can do all of them, and he doesn't seem out of place in any of them, and I think that's fantastic. He is.
And then there was two backups. They were fine, but it was all about the main story.
Yeah, I don't think I even read. I tried to read the double page spread one.
No, I did. I
don't have this. The Mark Waid one was fine, but it's not why we're talking about this.
Actually, I actually did like it. The thing was Reed decides to make them superheroes because of the things they lost when they got their powers. Like Sue was trying to be an actress, and Johnny felt invisible and
was Sue always trying to be an actress?
I don't remember if that was true or not. And then obviously. Ben Grimm thinks he's ugly and can't be looked. No one wants to see him, so he decides he's going to make them superheroes and it's going to turn everything around, which I thought it was a nice little story. But I thought this whole issue was terrific.
Kissing rock lips is a weird thing to do.
It is weird. Anyway. I think about that every time I see Ben and Alicia. Quick break. Let's talk about some underwear. You're a busy guy, Josh, and the world. Stop thinking about what to wear and just embrace the radically efficient Mack Weldon Daily Wear System. The Daily Wear System is a selection of clothes rooted in smart design, made with performance fabrics, and built to work together. From breathable t-shirts and polos to stylish button-ups and shorts, underwear, and beyond, Mack Weldon makes it easy for you to dress for work, leisure, and play, or wherever else your summer takes you. So, Josh, you've talked before about how you like to dress appropriately for appropriate situations. You like clothes that are specific to actions and events and times. What's your summer Mack Weldon situation now that we're heading into summer?
I mean, summer Mack Weldon situation is you're going to go with the, depending on the day, if it's real warm out, if you're going to be doing stuff, I'm going to go with the Air Knit or the newer Air Knit HD.
Mm-hmm.
The 18-hour, the just sort of gold standard one, that's kind of good always.
Right.
Like, it's kind of, that's your all-rounder. I got a couple of silvers that are hanging in, been around for a while.
But you're a guy who likes to, like, go hiking, you know, do a lot of outdoor activities, and so you've got your Mack Weldon gear for that.
Yeah, I mean, if it's gonna be a warm day, you definitely got to go with the air knit, because you don't even notice those things, but they stay where they are. You can go with I find the A sweatpant to be a little warm in that situation for me.
Right, that's more for a lazy day around the house.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, functional pockets.
Well, the radius pant, the radius pant's good for a hike.
It's true. I've done it. That's absolutely true. You go with a short for those things. Your Pima cotton shirt. Never a bad choice for that kind of thing. It's light. It doesn't get stinky. It wicks the moisture. It's all about moisture wicking. When I was a kid, no one talked about moisture wicking. That wasn't a thing that existed.
We were walking around not even knowing that moisture wicking was a thing, like savages.
We were walking around in synthetic blends, dying.
What's with all the polyester? That guy just passed out. Why don't we
trap all of this moisture and air inside? We didn't know.
So, you know,
and then at the other side, we were walking around going, I think cotton's the best thing for this. And it wasn't.
I'm going to tell you a quick story. And this is not in the script. This actually happened yesterday. You know, it's a little chilly in Los Angeles. We haven't really had the hot summer that we usually get. And I got out of the shower and it was like 69 degrees out. And in the house, and I was like, shit, I need pants. And I'm only looking for shorts. I could not find my A-sweat pants anywhere. And I was tearing up my drawers looking for it. So, first of all, got to figure out where they went. They're in some drawer. I just don't know exactly which drawer they're in. But that's where I went. My brain immediately went to the A-sweat pant.
I put them on the other night, starting to get cold at night. I went right for them.
Gotta find them. Got to find them. So, there's all kinds of different Mack Weldon gear for whatever your situation you're going to be in this summer. And actually, we got an email about Mack Weldon from a listener. Brian wrote in, says, I've been thinking about this for 3 weeks since I moved from San Francisco, where I could wear pretty much any kind of underwear all year round, to New York, where it's been hot, humid, and thunderstorms all the time, without sharing too much with Mack Weldon. Which Mack Weldon styles are best for heat and humidity? Something that won't bunch up.
I think I kind of answered. I think the deal is you want to look at the air knit.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to prefer the regular AirKnit over the AirKnit HD in that sense. But then you've got the 18 hours. Those are the best at not bunching up. The 18 hours, like, they're not moving on you. I've got pairs that are years old, and they are still doing the thing that they're supposed to.
Right.
They're not necessarily as good at the heat and moisture transference, but quality stuff.
Sure.
They don't pill. They don't get... yeah, you're good with either of those. It's going to come down to a matter of personal preference. The AirKnit are a little, not looser, but they're lighter feeling.
Right.
I don't think they bunch, though. I think you're good with either of those. You should check that out. Check the AirKnit for sure.
That's, you know, in those awful New York summers, you're going to want something.
I mean, I know that people don't think about New York City as this, but a humid New York day is... It's the worst. That heat just lives in between the buildings, and you there's no escaping anywhere.
That's the worst time in New York. The 1 month or so where it's just unbearably hot, and you're gonna want clothes that are breathable.
It's no different than Houston. It is as bad.
So that's why Mack Weldon's gonna help you out with breathable clothing. That will still look stylish no matter what you're doing in New York. So buy some time this summer with Mack Weldon's daily wear system. For 20% off your first order, visit MackWeldon.com/iFanboy and a promo code iFanboy. That's MackWeldon.com/iFanboy. Promo code iFanboy for 20% off. Mack Weldon, radically efficient wardrobing.
I like the word wardrobing.
Wardrobing.
I don't even know if that's a word, but I'm going to start using it anyway. Checking in on Spider-Woman 15. I know that you... this wasn't your cup of tea. But
I read it.
Did you?
Yeah, I was like, I couldn't remember. I was like, am I off this? I don't remember what I chose. And I read it, and I was like, there were things I liked, but I just don't care about this family storyline, and I just want it to be over.
There's that nonstop Spider-Man thing. This is like that. It's just constantly moving and like, you know, there's a different, like whenever her kid's in danger, she goes nuts and, mm-hmm. and goes, and you see like just, she's so tough, you know, like, and she's right. kind of sort of hold back her anger, you know, and her rage about things. And she's got people around her to be like, it's cool. You know, like we're going to be okay. And like, it's important to have that character, but what it isn't, it's not all about crazy mother lady. It's not that, because mm-hmm. that could get old really quick. And I think that it fits in pretty well. But I just like that it's sprawling and it keeps going. And there's one thing, you know, story that goes through it, and we keep exploring a history. And it isn't one of those things where some characters do not need to have their history explored. Mm-hmm. She is not that well known, even if there is an existing story. Most people don't know it, so they can have fun with it. Also, I dig the hell out of the Perry Perez art in this.
Yeah, no, the art's great.
It's exactly what it needs to be.
Actually, issue 110, which is super impressive for this book, but I'm not it's a legacy, obviously going back to the 70s, but still. I might just have you let me know when there's a new story.
Uh-huh.
If there ever is. It may just be that we just keep mining this her family forever and
this
ever.
This is a new chapter in this same story, but it's still not the same story. One that was.
Yeah.
Yes.
I just would like something else to happen.
That's fair.
I like how they just completely disregarded her new costume after about two issues.
Yeah. Well, that was on purpose too. Like they
I know, but they made such a big deal of it.
Yeah, but that's what they do.
This is the cosplay appropriate costume, and that's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Second Coming, Only Begotten Son, number 5. Mark Russell, Richard Pace, and Leonard Kirk. I liked this issue a lot.
I liked it a lot. I'm not sure if I even read number 4. I might have missed it, but I thought that worked pretty well, and I think it's I don't know if this is closest to sacrilege as it gets in this book, which is saying something. But also, to be fair, I think this has always been very respectful.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mark Russell is he's not a theologian, but he studied theology. I don't remember. You remember?
I mean, he may not have official credentials. I don't know, but he knows his stuff. He knows.
What was the first book he wrote? It was the Bible.
I forget. He's done two books that are basically tellings of what it's, you know, it's his interpretation basically of what it's saying.
Right.
And the thing that I liked in this is that some shit went down and Jesus is like, I gotta go home. I gotta see my dad. And he goes to heaven and you see like this, and he joins like a group of people on their way up to heaven. And,
yeah, that was the last issue. There was a bus going to a casino from an old folks' home, and it went off the rails during an earthquake, and everybody on the bus died.
Okay, I definitely missed that.
So we met all these characters and got to know them a little bit before they went to heaven in this issue.
So they get up there, and heaven's just kind of a, you got to put these people here. It's not like the great paradise afterlife, but it's a nice place to be.
Yeah, you get a nice little two bedroom, you know,
and God in this is just sort of like, you know, I made some mistakes. I'm dealing with them the best I can. But my favorite thing in this whole book is there is a man who's lived his life completely piously.
Yeah.
You know, he's done everything that he was supposed to do of it, probably a very hardcore interpretation of the Bible, and he shunned others and did whatever. And he's looking around kind of sad as other people are reuniting with their family. And God says, look at this sad tub of shit. And the guy's like, I did everything right. This isn't paradise. And he's like, oh, we got you a nice two-bedroom apartment. He's like, you're kidding me. All this for this? And he's like, yeah, you probably should have lived a little more.
Yeah, and he's like, everyone else is here. All the other sinners, and there's Muslims and Buddhists, and we're all here at the same place. And
Hitler's there. He's in hell, but hell's just kind of a shitty neighborhood.
Hitler and Stalin are neighbors, and they have a seagull problem. And I think this is really fun. I also like the sunspot subplot, which honestly, the further we get into the book, the least interested I'm in of Sunspot as a character.
Sure.
In the beginning, it was kind of interesting, but it's mostly been about how interesting the Jesus side of the story is. But Sunspot here, Sunstar, not Sunspot, that's Sunspot's an X-Men. Sunstar,
who knows,
decides to have an office, a storefront, where he can take people's suggestions, because when he helped rebuild the city, he got really popular. So he figured, hey, maybe I can do stuff people actually want me to do instead of just fighting crime. And so he discovered that something that was so well shown in Parks and Recreation, which is when you start pulling the crowd, you get really crackpot ideas and terrible ideas. And so he decides this was a really bad idea. to pull the crowd. Until the one guy says, you should just leave. Because one day you're going to decide we're not worth it and you're going to kill us all. And so for the best thing you could do for us is just to go. And that really fucked him up. But I thought this was a good issue.
It was. It was. Is this the end of this mini?
Who knows? No, of the mini, probably. Oh, I don't know.
It felt like an ending, but I guess there's also room for another thing.
No, next issue is the finale, 6 issues.
Okay, fair enough.
I wanted to mention Titans United, number one, from Kevin Scott and Jose Luis, Jonas Trinidad, and Rex Locus, and Carlos Manguel. The only name I recognize is the letterer. And I usually recognize a lot of the names. I was like, oh, a Titans book. That's fun. I'll check it out. And then I was like 2 pages into it. And I was like, well, this is a weird lineup. And then I realized, oh, it's the exact lineup from the TV show. So, and there's a big old ad for the TV show on the cover. It's literally just a, please watch the show. Here's the characters. They don't really make sense together in a book form, but okay. It's like, let me tell you the lineup 1 second. I got on the wrong page. It's Nightwing and Starfire, Raven and Changeling, or Beast Boy, Donna Troy and Connor Kent, Jason Todd, and Hawk and Dove. That's the team.
Does that show exist?
Yeah, it's on season 3 right now on HBO Max.
Do you watch it?
Season 3's been really fun. It's been the best season so far, but it works in a TV environment. And Jason Todd in the show is the villain now, as when he used to be the a member of the team as Robin. Now he's Red Hood. He's a villain as Red Hood. He doesn't really work on this team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just doesn't work. But it just was, you know, this was fine. But I was just annoyed the whole time. I was like, this is just the time. Like, this is the stuff that annoys me about the Hollywood influence, which is, you know, it's this team isn't put together because the writer decided this was the best group of characters to work together. This was put together because this used these characters. You know what I mean? That's what bugs me. It's not a choice from the comic person. It's a choice from the Hollywood people.
The idea is somebody was like, all right, well, we can sell books. And I guess that they're trying to sell comics to the people who like the show and don't buy comics, or at least sell extra. But my point is, like, how many copies could that be? Like, how much money could they make from this realistically?
Well, I'm actually going to disagree and tell you I think it's the opposite, because from what I know, working with Warner Brothers, every minute of every day, everyone at Warner Brothers' job is to increase HBO Max subscribers. And so, you know, which is so, I think what they're trying to do is say, you like this book? Well, these characters are all on a TV show. That's why it's advertised all over the place. And even if it only adds a significantly insignificant number of people watching the show, because the comic book, the whole of comic book reader is significantly insignificant.
I mean, what can this sell?
My point is, it doesn't matter. They have to show that at every moment they're trying to increase HBO Max subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, this seems to be what the whole point of this book is, which is, it's just annoying, because it shouldn't. It's the tail wagging the dog.
I was gonna say that's a very good use of that phrase. You know, if you think back to the pre-60s days, you know, the idea was like whatever passing trend was going, you would quickly get out some sort of comic book to take advantage of that thing. And that feels like this to me, but with a sort of modern twist on it. But it's just like whatever crumb you can salvage is, you know, why you do it. Because I can't think of another reason to do this.
Yeah. It's interesting. With the proliferation, the coming proliferation of a lot of HBO Max DC TV shows, my concern is what that's going to mean for the comics in terms of, you know, start aping all these things as opposed to the other way.
Well, I mean, like the thing about comics to me, mainstream comics, Marvel, DC, is that it has always been at the underlying part is like, well, all right, how do we make a buck off of this? But laid on top of that are people who are like, well, let's try to make it good when we do that. Now, that doesn't mean the company's doing it, but the people involved with making it are. Mm-hmm. They want to do a good product. They want to make, you know, something that they're proud of or whatever. But underneath it is all is just grass commercialism. That's that is the bones of the comic book industry. And this is the current version of it. Yeah. And it's no different than like every time there's a... But it brings up that question...
It's not different than it. You're right. It's no different than any of that. The tie-ins, and when there's a movie, there's suddenly a book for the, like, it's no different than that. It's just usually there's some level of like, oh, there's a Suicide Squad movie. We'll do a Suicide Squad book, but it won't be exactly the same characters from the movie. But it'll just be a Suicide Squad book. Here, it's like, these are the characters. So this team is now. But look, and it's not like it hasn't been that way for a while. I'm just, it just was so blatant. You know, like, Titans has been aping the cartoon lineup forever. You know, gone are the days of what's the best and most interesting lineup here. Now it's, okay, we have a cartoon, so use these characters. And that's it's just sad. That's all.
But in that instance, they're trying to sell comics there. They're trying to move some extra comics there.
Maybe, maybe not.
But more recently. Yeah. Well, that's my question. Like, I just don't.
The thing is right now in Hollywood, everything, all efforts are to increase streaming numbers. And that's.
Oh, I get that. No, and that makes sense.
But specifically, you know, it's because that's. Look, this is a whole longer discussion, but that's the only goal right now is to increase streaming numbers. And so even if they can only get 10 people from reading the book, you know, it's just frustrating. Those are the books we wanted to talk about. There weren't a ton of them, to be honest, but there were some, and we had fun talking about them. But at patreon.com/ifanboy, you can vote to add a book to the rundown. If you become a patron, every patron can do so. We call it the patron pick. And this week, for the second week in a row, we had a Jeff Lemire comic, Jeff Lemire number one, come in as the patron pick. This was an overwhelming favorite of the patron votes this week. Primordial number one from Image Comics, Jeff Lemire, Andrea Sorrentino, Dave Stewart, Steve Wands. And Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino have done several projects together. This is their latest. It's got monkeys.
Yes.
They're on the cover.
It does have monkeys. I liked it more than I did the one from last week.
May's book.
Yeah. But I don't know. It was fine. I don't know what the story
this
is.
This should be in your wheelhouse. It's an alternate history of the space race in which a couple things happen differently. One, Kennedy lost the 60 election to Nixon, and so there probably isn't the same support from the Nixon administration as there was from the Kennedy administration. And the other thing is when they sent the two monkeys up into space, in the book, the monkeys died, and so because the rocket failed. And so that made everyone skittish about sending humans up, and they canceled the space program. I don't know that would actually happen, but that's the conceit. The story of this book is that the monkeys didn't die because the rockets failed. The monkeys disappeared because they were taken. The same with Laika from the Soviet side, the dog. And so here, as the space program is being decommissioned in 1961, we have a doctor from MIT who's been brought on to help decommission the program to go through the equipment, see what's useful, what's not useful. He finds some paperwork that shows that maybe the monkeys did not die when they were said to have died, and then there's a whole bit about them being abducted possibly by aliens, and there may be a man in black in his car. This was a little obtuse for me, and I much preferred May's book to this.
I think that hearing the description of it, I should like it more than I did. It was less straightforward than May's book. And, I mean, it felt like a bit of a cold open. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing where in a cold open, you're not quite sure where you are, you know, or what's going on, but you'll understand later. I think comics tend to forget to do that part sometimes. So, you know, I'm very interested in the first bit, you know, the space program, but then there's some more alien abduction and, you know, metaphysical blah, blah, blah. I find that less interesting. That said, you know, and I think that if that's what your story is, then I think Andrea Sorrentino is great for that. Mm-hmm. His art is beautiful to look at, but it tends to be very ethereal and very, you know, given to maybe some surrealism, some symbolism rather than literalism, which are not my favorite kind of comic books. Only because it doesn't give me a good, I don't know where we're coming from. I don't know what the point is.
Yeah.
Always. And I don't need to know right away. I wouldn't be in the position of writing this off, but I'm not in love. You know, it was a weird first date. I don't know if I'd call again.
Yeah, I don't know. I you know, tend to give Lemire some rope, but also I don't read everything he writes. He's very prolific.
No. I was realizing that, like, he's really prolific. Like, he's doing a lot of books, a lot of different kind of books, way more than, you know, at the beginning of his career you would think you would have expected from him.
So yeah. I don't know. This one didn't do a lot for me, and I just don't know that I'm interested in any reading any more of it.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. But I think I'm going to read the next one.
Maybe I'll see what the week's like when it comes out next, but it didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't finish it going, ooh, what happens next? I finished it going, okay, well, that happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we're both people who love the space race, the stories about the space race, but I just didn't feel much to this one at all. Ratings on Primordial number 1 out of 5. I'm going to give it, this is tough, 2.8.
I was just going to say 3. I don't think it's a bad comic book. No, I just don't know if it's what I want.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. That's kind of where I'm at. No, it's funny. This is not the best segment we've ever done because I'm not really sure what to say about it. I don't not like it. I don't really like it. And I'm not sure what it is. And I feel like I should, but I don't yet. That's not a great review.
You may have convinced me to read a second issue just because I'm not sure what I think. But I don't know that I loved it. I definitely didn't love it. Definitely didn't love it. But I didn't dislike it. I just was, you know, I was fired up after reading May's book. I didn't really care or think about it after I finished reading Primordial.
Yeah, I mean, that might have been it. Like, you were probably more excited than I was, but I bet you were looking forward to it.
No, not necessarily. Like I said, he's put out a lot of stuff. And for some reason, the stuff he does with Andrea Sorrentino, I haven't really cared for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he did some, like, post-apocalyptic book with Andrea, and I didn't think I made it more than 3 issues into that. I just, for whatever reason, whatever they're into together is not what I'm into, you know.
Fair.
patreon.com/ifanboy. You can vote to add a book to the rundown, or at the $5 higher level, get your superpower live on the show, like these patrons.
Wayne Murphy has the ability to warp reality and therefore recast films.
Oh. Whoa.
So he'll be watching the movie and he'll be like, this is all wrong. Leonardo DiCaprio should not be the lead in Gangs of New York. And he will warp reality. Now, we don't know if he's good at casting movies.
Right.
We don't know if by recasting somebody else in that role, he ruins another movie that person would have been in at the time they were shooting. These are all, you know, it's a Scarlet Witch of film casting.
Wow.
It could change everything. But that he can do it.
That is a great and terrible power.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, like, you don't even know, like, you're watching, you know, some classic film. You're watching The Godfather and you say, you know, you got to get so-and-so out of that role. He just decides he hates James Caan as Sonny. And he moves it. And the person he puts in there, doesn't matter, is fantastic. But by doing so, he erases, you know, swaths of film that come after it.
Interesting.
You just, because
that's a whole
know.
Domino, I mean, effect.
Sure.
It's a butterfly effect.
But it might be nothing. It might be somebody was off at that time. It's I don't know. It's becoming more than I initially envisioned when I started
talking.
Quite a
power you hold in your hand.
But yes. Yeah. Be careful. It's a little like, it's a little like Black Bolt. Really don't want to use it.
Yeah, only when necessary.
You can do it more recently. You can be like, Zac Efron shouldn't have been in that.
George Crawford.
Is that still a thing?
Zac Efron, yeah. George Crawford. If George is using a pen or a pencil, it never runs out of ink or shrinks. So his pencil never dies. It always stays.
Does it dull?
No, it never. It stays sharp and it always stays at the same length.
Hmm.
And the pen never runs out of ink while he's using it.
So he's only got the two.
Yeah. His basic writing implements never... He never has to buy more writing implements.
Do you find that if something doesn't wear out, you still kind of want a new version of it or an updated thing?
And no.
It's annoying that it doesn't wear out?
No.
That's a me thing.
Hmm.
Like, I'll buy clothes, give an example. And be like, I want different clothes, but these are all still perfectly fine. So I don't really have an example for it. So I don't have a reason for it. Justification for a younger, poorer Josh would have been, I just, you know, these are all worn out, so I get to get some new clothes. Now that just doesn't really happen the same way it used to.
Interesting.
When you were a kid, it was new school stuff, you know, every year, and you would outgrow things, so you had to. When you're older, you just get stuck with the same stuff forever.
True.
This is not what you were talking about, but that's what I was. That's what made me.
That's
think.
Okay. I understand.
Justin. Just Justin.
Mm-hmm. It's probably Timberlake, honestly.
I mean, that seems like the most likely thing.
Yeah, probably.
I would think that he's huge into us.
Yeah,
and it would be the closest of having a rich benefactor, but as of yet, we don't get those sweet NSYNC royalty fortunes that we'd asked for. I asked for the Masters to Backstreet's Back. No, that's a different band.
That's a different band. In the title.
You know, some days you're feeling a bit unstable. You're feeling a little loose inside.
Oh, uh-oh.
He'll firm you up.
Wow.
He'll firm things up. I don't know. My stomach's a little. There you go. Oh, thanks.
He zaps things you all firm into firmness. Up.
Yeah, he'll firm things up. That's what I'm saying. I just want to point out, by the way, I wrote this one several weeks ago, and I am not currently feeling well. No, I think I'm good.
You feel fine.
I don't need a visit from Justin right now, but when I thought of it, I might have.
Right.
He'll firm you up.
So, Aaron Reinhard, do you remember in Star Wars when someone was...
whatever it is.
Someone was referred to as laser brain?
Yep.
Aaron Reinhard has a laser brain. He can shoot lasers out of his brain. Now, the problem is... holes, you know, he can't shoot up straight at his forehead because there's no hole there, but it come out of his nose, his ears, his mouth.
That to me creates physics problems.
Yeah, listen, there are physics problems, but Aaron's power subverts them.
Because a laser is, if nothing else, a straight line.
So
and the path from your brain out the nose is, if nothing else, quite a crooked line.
He has a series of tiny mirrors in his skull that bounce the laser through the cavities and canals.
and allow him to therefore excite cats.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it just like a pen light laser? Like it's totally safe unless you shine it in somebody's eyes?
Yeah, exactly. He's not going to burn through anything with it, but he can shoot it through. He's also awesome at raves. You know? If your laser machine goes down.
That's very nice. That's good.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go and you can add a book to the rundown and you can get your superpower live on the show.
Patreon.com/iFanboy is also where you can go and help support the show. You can see... you can't see, I'm telling you. The patrons have unlocked all sorts of content and additional stuff that is part of this iFanboy experience that we all know... and live with, such as the patron pick that we just did, and those powers, and Talksplode podcast, and Booksplode podcast, and Mediasplode podcast. That's what we do. We do podcasts and YouTube content being re-uploaded from all our old video shows. We have a new stretch goal. The next one is that we will add, you guessed it, another podcast, a comic book TV show special. Special edition where we're not going to cover like every show that comes out or by episode, but at the end of them on a semi-regular basis, we will do a show. You're not going to have a problem with not getting enough of those. I don't think that's not going to be a thing. We're not putting a regular schedule on it, but it will be a thing that is part of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then of course there's the great communities, the Facebook patron group and the Discord server. Which is worth the price of admission. That's what I think. If that's what you're searching for, you can go over to ifanboy.threadless.com. You can find 11 William Miller's real age at the beginning of Almost Famous. 11 designs that can be put on shirts, sundries, phone cases, skateboards, a lot of things. Literally, you name it. Not literally, but many things that you could name are things you could put any one of those 11 designs on. And I want to make this clear, you cannot combine designs on an item. It's not possible. The technology does not currently allow it.
No.
You can go to ifanboy.com/support. Support, where you will find a PayPal link if you want to deal with any of that stuff. You can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. That's our affiliate link where you could click on that and go through. It does nothing. It costs you nothing. It makes no impact on your lives at all. But you can also find, if you want to buy the books that we talk about, or you want to look at the music that we put on the show, that all will bring you there, because you should support those people.
Mm-hmm.
The authors and creators of the art, I mean. That's all. Let's go to audience questions, which are not Patreon dependent.
No.
We will do them anyway. I want to make that, you know, it's always going to be free. That's a thing. You're just making an investment in the whole thing. And I think that's worth it on its own.
Bobby from Seattle, Washington says, I've been thinking about this question ever since I got done reading Dark Days number one. Say you've activated the Pym particle when the events of that issue happen. Would you rather get stuck as Giant Man or Ant Man? Pros and cons as to why. This is a great question.
Ant Man. I thought about it a lot, and I don't even remember what I came up with, but what I said was Ant-Man, just because it'd be hard to be anywhere.
Also, a lot more food is required as Giant Man.
Good point.
If you're talking about a society that's in big trouble and can't maybe produce as much food as before, you've got to eat a lot of food as Giant Man.
Tell you what, if we could shrink our whole society down in a more compelling way than that Soderbergh movie.
It wasn't Soderbergh, that was Alexander Payne, I think.
Was it Payne? You're right. Yeah. It was Alexander Payne. I don't know why I thought it was.
Great concept. Terrible movie.
Yeah, yeah. But that would solve a lot of problems. So I didn't even thought about that part. I just thought, like, you're not going to be able to get pants. You're not going to be able to sit down.
You got to wear the same suit all the time.
Yep.
Well, I guess it's just a matter of resources, but someone would have to suit. The same problem with Ant-Man. Someone would have to make you clothes. I guess you could wear toy. No?
Well, you could make your own.
True.
You have much more to work with.
Yeah.
Like, you just, the gathering of materials for having giant pants is a problem.
Right.
Whereas the other way, you know, the world is your oyster. But, plus, he's controlling the bugs and stuff, so he's not in danger from that kind of thing.
But as Ant-Man, no one can hear you. You know?
Hey, guys!
Mm-hmm. Did you hear that?
Listen, it's not a perfect scenario in either way.
Where if I get stepped on?
I feel like that's not as big of a problem because you just, you know, you can see what's coming. You know where to be.
Yeah. I'm still agreeing with you. I think Ant-Man is the way to go here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are pros and cons to both. The pros for Giant Man is, you know, you're giant.
Let's see. Let's take this question from Anthony.
But which Anthony?
I'm going with the second one, but I didn't want to mention that there was two. In case first Anthony was like, what about me? But cat's out of the bag. What has happened with DC Comics? I've looked through upcoming solicitations, and they don't make sense to me. They're filled with dozens of randomly named Batman one-shots and minis. They seemingly changed the price and page count of multiple monthlies, and there seem to be more Joker-themed comics than Superman. Was this caused by AT&T? Do you think that it came with the upcoming merger with Discovery? I love DC Comics, but I don't understand their publishing priorities. Thanks, I've been thinking about this for 3 months.
He says, do you think it'll change with upcoming merger with Discovery?
Oh.
Go ahead.
I cannot speak to the corporate causes there. I have no idea how that works, whether it's AT&T, Discovery. I doubt it. But I feel what you're saying. I understand that. I don't think it's much more unusual than it has been with either publisher for a while, but it's particularly acute right now at DC. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you got to pick your spots. When, you know, you want to get your DC fix, you just go, all right, well, I don't know what any of this is, but I know what this is. And so you go with that.
Well, first, I mean, the number one thing is if people are annoyed by all the Batman books, stop buying them. I mean, that's the first thing. I mean,
mm-hmm.
They put them out because they sell. And people, like, the same thing people complain about all the Batman animated movies. It's like, then stop buying them, because that's why they put them out. They sell more than the other ones. But it's hard to know why any publisher does what they do, because they have the information we don't. I do know that a character like Superman, who I love, is going to be less popular than a character like the Joker in terms of the broader public. So that's why there's more Joker material. I agree with you, Anthony, and you, Josh, that there's too much Joker material. I like the Joker. I like reading Joker stories. But in the olden days when it wasn't such a corporate synergy, the Joker only came around once a year or so. But now he's basically seems to be there all the time, always. And because that's because when you look at the total number of revenue, you look at t-shirts, you know, Joker sells a lot of, makes a lot of money for Warner Brothers.
And that stuff makes more money than publishing.
Right. So
at least like, in aggregate. So
focus on the characters that make the money. That's what they do.
They're it's unfortunate. IPs.
We talk about this a lot. This is the fear that comic fans, as the beaten down stepchild of media, has been always that one day things would change, and they finally have in the last couple of years. And the corporate boot has gotten heavy. And it never used to be that way. Paul Levitz's whole job as president of DC Comics was to keep the corporate boot off the neck of the publisher, and he did a great job of that. And then he retired, and everything changed. And then they got bought by AT&T, and then, you know.
And then it's all, it becomes all about like maximum shareholder value and return on investment and all that stuff. And
then the office moved from New York to Burbank, where they're definitely under the boot. Like it all changed when Levitz retired, and this is the result you get. You get comics that are chosen not because there's good stories to tell, but because characters sell a lot of toys.
And to be fair, this is not unlike the nature of the beast. I mean, this is was always inherent in the thing, and it's the danger of sort of forming an artificial emotional entanglement with IP.
Mm-hmm.
You know, IP.
Ultimately, corporations run them, not you know.
But all right, so it's just don't think of them. I think the best way to go is to not think of them as characters that mean something to you, but you can think of existing stories as pieces of art that you connected with, and those haven't gone anywhere.
Right.
You know, those are around. Now, it's not exactly the same thing as being able to look forward to the issues that come up, but there's still stuff in there you're going to like. There's still the same people are writing and drawing who have been doing so over a long time.
Right.
You know, so there's going to be the thing that gives you a feeling in there somewhere. But you might have to just change your expectations of what it is.
But also, I just go back to sales. Like, if Superman comics started selling through the roof, they'd put out more Superman comics.
Yeah.
And so Batman comics sell really, really well. So anyone who wants to keep their job in charge of publishing will say, more Batman books. Ship them out the door.
Who wants to get work being a comic book creative professional, which, you know, the number of people who want to do that greatly outnumber the jobs available, are going to do those things. They're going to try to make it as good as possible. I have no doubt about that. Anybody I've ever met in comics wants to do as good a job as possible, but it's within a framework.
Ship them all out the back door. Front door, side
that
door.
Mirror. But no, I do agree with you. Like I'm losing the thread. But I've lost the thread before. And you know, you find your bits.
Yeah, and I think DC in particular is a little unfocused in terms of what, like, this is a longer conversation and larger conversation, but Marvel is very focused. You know what Marvel's strategies are. All across the board, comics, movies, everything. Uh-huh. Warner Brothers, DC, you just have no idea what they're doing.
Well, it just feels like
DC.
I mean, if you looked at their corporate structure at a certain point, there was like an editor in chief who you never heard from. There was co-publishers. There was executive editors. There's all this different stuff. I know. And it felt like things were coming from 100 different directions. And then Didio leaves and he wasn't editor in chief, but he was de facto editor in chief. And he had this whole plan that they kind of half abandoned and half didn't. And now you have this like weird, there's a cohesiveness that's missing.
There's no cohesiveness at DC. And they're sort of embracing that with their multiverse philosophy.
It'll come around. It will. Like there's no way it doesn't sort of come the other way.
Right.
Until they stop publishing, you know, comics, then it will shift and change and be what it will be.
It's a mess, though. So. You're not wrong, Anthony.
Yep.
No, Anthony.
Anthony, if you would like to write in, you could do so at contact@ifanboy.com. You can also send in emails for our media splode. You put that media splode in the subject line so we know. Episode 800 is coming. I don't know if you've counted, but we are on 798, so you have a little bit of time left.
Two more weeks.
To send in emails for that, make sure that you have 800 in the subject line for that. We have systems. We must keep we must have order.
Uh-huh.
You want to put it in there. Let's wrap this up.
Yeah, eventually I'll give them like a real deadline for that. like, you have until this day and time to do it, because I got to print.
You have at least until the next show comes out, so.
Get it in. Get them in.
Yep.
The earlier you get it in, the less chance we got to start skipping emails on that show, because, you know, it gets too long, but the earlier, you're better. Yep. Special edition Batman Long Halloween Part 2, that's on the feed in the back somewhere. And also, just right behind this show, just came out a couple days ago, was our latest Media Splode show, which we talked about the things we've been enjoying for the last month, and our main topic was disaster movies, the ones we love and why we love them. And I thought that was terrific and terrifically fun conversation. We had a lot of fun. We laughed a lot. Talked about a lot of disaster movies. It was a good time. So that's behind the show on the feed. And then later this month, there's going to be two Talksplodes this month?
If not this month, then, you know, like early next.
There'll be at least one this month.
At least one, and another one shortly after. Which side of the line it falls on is to be decided, but yeah.
And as we talk about episode 800, it's going to be live streamed. If you want to watch us do it live, and the mess that will be, live stream October 1st at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. I talked to Dr. Ryan Haupt this past week. This is news to Josh. And he claims he wants to do the show with his newborn. And I was like, really? And he said yes. So we're still in negotiation. I think he is still in negotiations, but he claims he wants to do the show. So we'll see.
He'll be in the parking lot of McDonald's.
I said, it's 3 hours. He said, I know. And also, how do you know, Josh, that no one's listening right now? Because
people have said, hey, when are you doing that Shang-Chi show? Yeah. And I'm like, we did talk about this.
We've had many people through every way you can reach out to us ask, hey, where's the Shang-Chi review? And that's how you know nobody's listening right now. Because
I tend to think that they're just not listening to the regular show at all anymore. And these are people who just come back for the movie ones.
Possibly. Well, there certainly are people who do that, but.
Sure. No shame. No guilt. No, it's fine.
But when Shang-Chi hits streaming, we'll review it, because we're not going to the movie theater right now. At least I'm not.
Get over to, I can't even if I wanted to. Get over to ifanboy.com to find all of our shows and our vast history of comic book writing from our talented staff. And I say staff in a present tense because I still think of them as that way. Mm-hmm. When I interact with one of our folks, I go, that's our writer. That's our, even though that has not been a thing for a very long time.
It's been 8 years. Eight years!
Go to facebook.com/ifanboy or follow @ifanboy on Twitter or @ifanboycomics on Instagram. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out, so you can be prepared. You can follow us individually, C.S. Kilpatrick and J.A. Flanagan on Instagram. You can go to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy to subscribe and like and watch our history of iFanboy Comics, which is also a sort of history of comics in the 21st century, and slightly before that. So it's a historical document,
historical artifact
of young men in shorts on a couch. That's what it is. You can follow us. I said that already. We didn't know. This past week there was a mini on Aztec: The Ultimate Man, Volume 1, which was apparently hosted by Ron.
It was. I was as surprised as anybody.
Did like Paul Grist do it?
It was Howard Porter and Grant Morrison.
That's just weird.
It was a spinoff from the JLA book.
Yeah, I know. Why did he? Anyway, there's then know. one of those anthology shows. We have Wits End number 3, which is Wally Wood. It came from the storage unit with our friend Connor, who goes through his old stuff, who did. The past, listen, it's Kang-like. And then there's Hellblazer Pandemonium, which obviously is me. I think that's the Jock.
Correct, Jock.
That was the Jock book.
Jock OGN. He drew it. Yeah. Who was the writer on that?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
It's best not to. We'd be doing it forever. And then there's also a show of DC versus Marvel, where I'm sure we sorted that out.
Well, yeah, we can't look for that. They're no different, but that was a fun one.
Yeah, yeah.
So all those are on youtube.com/ifanboy. Subscribe if you want to catch up. We still have probably a year, slightly less than a year left of new shows or shows that'll come out on that. And there's a lot of people listening now who are not around at that time, 2007, 8, 9, 10, when we were doing those shows. So if you have never seen them, they're still lots of fun.
And one of our viewers, listeners, and they favorite are viewers, things to do. At that point. They are. Yeah. Or they're both. Is to point out, hey, you said this in 2009, but you said this in 2021.
Right.
At which point I would say, yeah, Yeah, because your opinion should grow and change over time.
Right. You can't, this is not about a sticking an amber situation. You should
no.
You should evolve as a human.
And if you don't, that doesn't mean you're strong. It means that you're an impenetrable lout.
If you like the show and things like that, write us a review or leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Whatever your aggregator is, or better than that, is tell your friends. Word of mouth is a great way to help support the show. And people do that all the time on social media. We thank you for doing that. And we're putting this one in the books for this week. My name is Connor.
I'm Josh, the motherfucking champion!